The new year brought Canada a long overdue gift, the resignation of its Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. While lots of Canadians will be relieved he's gone, any celebrations will be tainted by the state he's left the country in. With immigration, the cost of living, homelessness, and crime through the roof, and now Donald Trump threatens the country saying it will be the 51st state, it's clear that Canada has reached a breaking point. And what's worse is that new developments mean 2025 has already promised even more chaos. If you could just choose one word to define the legacy of Trudeau's 9 years of power, it would be hypocrisy. On nearly every issue he originally campaigned on, Trudeau's Liberal Party has either failed to meet their promises or made things even worse. One of the defining issues of Trudeau's time in office has been his government's policy on immigration. It used to be the case that immigration was mostly ignored in Canadian politics. Until recently, the majority of Canadians were unconcerned with high immigration levels, with only 27% of people saying they thought it was too high in 2022. And then just 2 years later, now that Canada's finally feeling the effects of this, that number has more than doubled to 58%. Over nearly a decade in power, Trudeau opened up the floodgates and let in millions of immigrants in a plan he said would boost the economy. And in those 10 years, Canada's population rose from 35 million to 40 million, with over 90% of those people coming into the country from abroad. It places the nation in the top four of Western nations for both the total amount of immigration and immigrants as a proportion to the total population. Now, regardless of how you feel about immigration's effects on community cohesion or cultural identity, it's certainly fed the flames of Canada's economic and housing crisis. While think tanks and policymakers salivated over having more workers to fuel the failing economy, they didn't compensate for even a fraction of the necessary infrastructure. Housing has been one of the most costly problems for Canada's economy and for its citizens. Today, Canada has the lowest number of housing units per person compared to the rest of the G7. What's more, it's getting so much worse with so many people coming into the country compared to a much lower number of homes built. Since 2016, Canada would have needed an extra 100,000 more homes that are built just to compensate for its immigration-led growth. The results have been a housing bubble that far exceeds any other comparable economy. The effects have been worse for renters. Renters increased by over 12% in 2022 and 8.6% in 2023, only beginning to slightly fall this year. These sharp rises in housing costs have been at the vanguard of Canada's economic catastrophe. On average, housing prices in general are up more than 30% since 2020. Food prices have also outpaced stagnating wage growth over that same time frame, with general inflation taking its toll as well. And it's left regular people struggling to make ends meet or even find a job in the first place. And now with Canada weak and vulnerable, Trump is threatening economic force to make Canada the 51st state, which is only happening because of the embarrassment that Trudeau left the country in. However, it's also no secret that these problems aren't unique to just Canada, of course, but they're often worse in Canada than other countries, which is why it's been falling behind compared to other developed nations. And Trudeau's government is clearly to blame for this when you compare how they handled it compared to other nations. It's also happened with record levels of government borrowing and spending. Canada's federal debt is a good example of just how much money Canada has been losing. Since 2015, this has increased from $612 billion to $1.2 trillion in Canadian dollars. It's just more pressure on the country's faltering economy, with taxpayers bearing the brunt of the short-sighted spending. A large part of Trudeau's campaigns have been focused on issues like climate change and political ethics, but he even betrayed voters on these key promises. Canada has lost billions on Trudeau's controversial expansion of the massive Trans Mountain pipeline. In financial terms, the project has amounted to billions of dollars of subsidies for the oil industry. It speaks to a pattern of Trudeau virtue signaling for liberal policies while just doing whatever he wants anyway. As a substitute for actually protecting Canada's natural world, Trudeau's cabinet instituted a nationwide carbon tax instead. The policy has made fuel even more expensive while doing nothing to confront the real problems of price gouging and corporate profit. Minor drops in emission are a harsh price to pay. And so it's unsurprising that the opposition has been campaigning for the upcoming election by saying they'll scrap the tax entirely. Even political ethics have been controversial under Trudeau. Despite his image as an enemy of corruption, Trudeau has been caught breaking the rules to let corporations get off the hook for their crimes. When a Canadian construction company was found to have committed fraud in a massive deal with the Libyan government, Trudeau intervened and pressured his ministers to let them off the hook. When the news came out, it permanently damaged his reputation. The reality is that Trudeau's policy decisions have pushed Canada to the brink and made existing problems far worse than they needed to be. Now, before we continue, I also want to talk about another kind of budget that's being ruined, my personal budget. You see, recently I found out I was being charged hundreds of dollars every month for so many unnecessary subscriptions I completely forgot I still had running. But luckily today's sponsor Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is an all-in-one personal finance app that helps you cancel subscriptions, lower bills, and manage your money better. Once you connect your bank account, Rocket Money identifies all of your subscriptions in a single list. From there, you can select the ones you don't want anymore, and Rocket Money may be able to help you cancel with just a few taps. Rocket Money has helped its customers save up to $740 a year when you use all of the app's premium features. They've also helped customers save over $500 million in cancel subscriptions. Rocket Money will automatically scan your bills to find savings. With just a couple of taps, Rocket Money can help negotiate your bills for you, from internet service to cable and phone bills. With no need to worry about customer service calls, you just let the app's negotiators go to work for you to try to get the best possible rate. So to save more and spend less, join the over 5 million members using Rocket Money today and go to rocketmoney.com/moon or click the link in the description to get started for free. Take homelessness, for instance. It's a problem for all nations, but Canada is particularly struggling with it. With so many more workers to fill jobs, so few houses, and with prices so high, it's unsurprising that it's reached crisis levels. It's especially dangerous because temperatures drop so sharply in the winter. As it got worse over the past decade, the shelters all filled up and tent cities sprang up on once peaceful streets. It visualized the problem of addiction, poverty, and inequality bubbling away under the surface of Canadian society. Homelessness charities have reported 40% increases in chronic cases in just a couple of years since the pandemic. They just don't have enough resources or space to even compensate for the government's inadequacy. The main driving force behind homelessness is economic pressure. Every cent that gets added to the cost of living for Canadians pushes more people over the poverty line, and eventually out onto the streets. This is both a tragedy of unimaginable scale and a drag on Canada's economy. But it's also a breeding ground for crime, and it's transformed Canada's largest cities. So let's take a look at British Columbia, one of Canada's western provinces, and one that's been hardest hit by this new reality. One of the groups most affected by the disorder on the streets are businesses. Nobody is going to want to go to your shop if they're afraid for their own safety. The homelessness also leads to more crime like shoplifting and vandalism, which also bites into profit margins. In British Columbia, a province-wide 2024 survey of small and medium business owners showed that over 80% of them were becoming more anxious about crime and disorder. 58% have seen marked increases in violence. 56% have seen more shoplifting and theft than before. And 61% have had to pay more for security, and nearly 40% said they doubted they could stay open if this carried on for just two more years.
Crime reduction is the top priority for small businesses here in Toronto. That's according to a survey that comes just days before the new mayor is elected. Stone Harriman runs a computer repair shop on Dundas, just east of Yonge Street. His door is no longer open for business.
I keep my door locked. Out of safety, you know, I by appointment only at this point. And notice a lot of other stores are sort of doing that now.
The factors that have led to this have been years in the making. British Columbia declared that the levels of drug abuse were a public health emergency all the way back in 2016. But in just the past few years, it's gotten so much worse. Some have put the blame on British Columbia's experiment with decriminalizing low-level drug offenses and turning a blind eye to public drug use. In January 2023, the province announced that this new policy was going to run for a three-year trial period. But they didn't even get halfway through before some of the changes were rolled back, specifically about public use. For residents of the province and those on the front lines of the crisis, it had become a nightmare.
A proposal to push for a supervised drug consumption site in Richmond, BC, drew some intense backlash this week.
Emboldened by a lack of intervention, hard drug use became common almost everywhere. On the streets and public parks, just yards away from schools, and even in the hospitals. When addicts are going to get their fix in playgrounds, and nobody's even stopping them, you know something has gone terribly wrong. The number of complaints and incidents surrounding this policy were unbearable. The effects on people's lives were even worse.
So, I mean, I live near Gage Park, and even on the way to the park, there's an encampment just about 200 feet from Gage Park. So you have a few different encampments there, so I've seen everything from shotguns being recovered and my photo was featured on the front page of the paper to fires, prostitution, and certainly drug use on a daily basis. So as myself, with someone, I have a four-year-old daughter with my wife, and you know, we certainly don't feel safe anymore bringing our child to the park.
Nurses and healthcare workers, for example, whose jobs were already some of the hardest there, are now having to deal with their patients openly using hard drugs while dealers walk in and out to service their clients. In one Vancouver hospital in particular, it happened so much that the floor became covered in broken needles and pipes. At another, a leaked memo instructed staff not to interfere with drug use or deals on site, and even to let people bring weapons into the building. So it's no surprise that the president of the Nurses Union for British Columbia has had enough, saying that, "We believe in harm reduction. but harm reduction should not come at the cost of harming a nurse or any other healthcare workers. Canada's giant bureaucracy and overlapping governmental structure has let this crisis play out in its streets and irreversibly harmed Canadian society in the process. The only people it benefits are the higher level criminals, both the ones in office and the international cartels that are masterminding the illicit operations. The amount of addicts and the resulting open drug markets this has created are prime pickings for criminal gangs, as it gives them a steady supply of customers who spend pretty much all of their money on what they're selling. It amounts to an entire ecosystem where state benefits and whatever else addicts can scrounge up goes directly into their pockets. It's unsurprising that police busted the largest drug super lab in Canadian history last year. Operating out of a farm in rural British Columbia, police found a factory stocked with enough fentanyl to kill the entire population of Canada twice over.
The over 95 million potentially legal doses of fentanyl that have been seized could have taken the lives of every Canadian at least twice over.
They also found 390 kilograms of methamphetamine, 35 kilograms of cocaine, and 15 kilograms of MDMA, as well as dozens of firearms and half a million in cash. Police believe the lab was servicing both Canada as a whole and exporting to other countries.
We believe the lab is run by a transnational organized crime group involved in the mass production and distribution of fentanyl and methamphetamine in Canada and abroad.
What's even more concerning is that the lab had the facilities to make more drugs and even to research new ways to manufacture them. Astonishingly, only one arrest was made in the wake of the bust, someone believed to be a foot soldier for the gang who owned it. The news then dropped the story after it left the news cycle. And the sad thing is that this raid was just a drop in the bucket of Canada's overall problem. It's likely that there are lots more of these kinds of operations in Canada. Even just in British Columbia, they're finding more and more labs. With so much open country and so many willing customers, it's almost an inevitability. It's even spilling across the border into the US now, something that was unthinkable just decades before. All of this chaos and disorder is just another way that Canada's economy and government has become weaker. It can't keep control of its finances, its streets, or even its defenses. Over their nearly decade in power, Trudeau's government has intentionally and destructively neglected the military and defense spending. And now Canada will have to double their spending on defense over the next decade just to meet the bare minimum NATO targets. It's been well known for a long time that Canada has lagged behind other NATO countries in defense. For a long time, military readiness and armament took a backseat to other issues for lots of Canadians. In 2014, only 12% saw it as a top priority. Now, nearly 30% have it as one of their biggest political concerns. On the one hand, you can't really blame them for thinking this way. Their only border is with the US, and while the Canadian people have a proud military history, it didn't seem like there was anything big to worry about on the horizon. Today, though, the power balance between countries is changing every day, and states like China and particularly Russia are extending their control over their weaker neighbors. The melting ice has opened up inaccessible land in the northwest, and if war did actually break out, Canada would be open to attack. As fanciful as an invasion seems though, a much more realistic concern is Canada's reputation with its allies and its rivals. Trudeau has marginally increased defense spending in his time in office, but it's been seen by most as too little too late and lots doubt whether it's actually a serious attempt to rebuild the military or just more worse to get their allies off their case. In a lot of ways though, the damage has already been done. While Trudeau loves spending money, the Canadian military was neglected instead. It suffered the usual bureaucratic problems that Canadian society has been dealing with, of course. When recruit numbers fell too low, they started allowing permanent residents who aren't citizens to join. It was a good idea on the surface, but signing up could take up to 2 years. It meant that so many people gave up halfway through that it barely made a difference on the numbers. Equipment and vehicles have also suffered, with not enough money to keep them maintained and ready for action. As of April 2024, the army could only operate at 54% capacity due to inoperable equipment and a lack of manpower. It's worse than the Navy and the Air Force, both of them can't even meet half of their intended capacity. And all of this means that other NATO members simply can't count on Canada anymore as a military ally. In 2022, Canada couldn't even take part in NATO's joint naval maneuvers because they didn't have a single ship ready to join. The elephant in the room is that Canada is almost entirely reliant on the US and other NATO members for its defense. It's a big bargaining chip, and as we've seen, it's definitely not the only thing that's giving Canada a weak hand right now. Economic chaos is also running rampant as well, made worse by the crime and drug problems. Trudeau's recent announcement also means that an election is all but imminent. After 9 years of Liberal rule, all signs are now seemingly pointing to Pierre Poilievre. In a traditionally left-wing country, his Conservative Party has enjoyed a massive boost in support off the back of Trudeau's failings. His low-tax, low-spending promises ran counter to Trudeau's spendaholic policies, policies that many now clearly think have made Canada's dissent much worse. Musk has also been involved, pushing the Conservative candidate online. His intervention and bankrolling of Trump is widely regarded as one of the main reasons behind his success. While Trudeau is nearly completely responsible for his party's impending defeats, having the world's richest man working against you as well can't really help either. With a Liberal leadership contest soon to take place, it's doubtful anyone could stand a chance of beating the Conservatives and stopping them from getting a majority. Just ask the Democrats how well their last-minute replacement did last year. But until it all gets sorted out over the next year, the country is in a political limbo. Right now, Canada is weak economically, socially, militarily, and politically. It could well be the reason for Trump's threat of a 25% tariff on Canadian goods, which would possibly spark a trade war between the two countries. He's also insinuated that Canada might as well just become the 51st state and that Canada is reliant on the US economically. While it is true that 77% of Canada's exports are to the US, a record high not seen since 2006, is not the complete picture. What is clear is that a trade war will hurt both economies. But this will harm Canada so much more. In nearly all of the metrics and areas we've talked about, the US is doing better than their neighbour. The response from Canada has yet been another source of political division, as some regional officials have threatened boycotts, turning off the oil pipelines or other methods of retaliation. Others like Trudeau himself have been more focused on trying to negotiate their way out of it. Meanwhile, projections show that 25% tariffs would lead to a Canadian recession as early as this year, with a 2.5% drop in GDP by 2026. It would mean far more chaos and suffering in Canada than there already is. America's GDP, meanwhile, would drop by around 1% over 1 year with the tariffs, according to estimates. Actually becoming a US state is of course completely off the table, both for Canada's people and their politicians. Justin Trudeau and Pierre are clear about this, as is pretty much anyone else you ask, but the power imbalance means that Trump can demand major concessions, and starting with their independence itself is most likely to be a negotiating tactic. While Pierre and Trump might be ideological allies, they're also both firmly committed to their own country's welfare and freedom. It could make the eventual negotiations a long drawn out process, which would hurt Canada much more than the US in all likelihood. Regardless of the ethics of pressuring your allies like this, we'll have to wait and see how it all really plays out. As Trump puts his focus on rebalancing the US's relationship with his allies, it could leave Canada high and dry. And the news couldn't come at a worse time for a country left decimated by years of mismanagement. Canada will eventually recover, but it could be a long time before it regains its reputation on the international stage with its own people.